Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning back into the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson, and we have our Heisman finalists. On Monday night, it was announced that Colin Klein, Johnny Manziel, and Manti Te'o will be going to New York as Heisman Trophy finalists, and it was just as you heard on this very podcast from my guest, Mr. Chris Houston. So first of all, my applause for you correctly predicting the finalists. Obviously,
did I do that? I don't even remember doing that.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you said I think it'll be those three because we were talking about, you know, where do you think the line will be drawn, and we'll get more to, I guess, some of the people that might not have made the cut. Chris, obviously, this is your time, man. This is like for the Heisman pundit this week. Tell me, what are you going to be up to this week?
This is the week where I turn into a beautiful butterfly, and then the rest of the year I go back into a silkworm.
this is your metamorphosis right here?
Exactly. You know, it's going to be good. We're going to fly out. When I say we, I refer to myself and David Capel, who's affectionately known as Heisman Pundit Jr. He's kind of my aide-de-camp. On the website. We're flying out tomorrow on, if you want to get specific, we're going to fly out at 1:40 p.m. Pacific time. Yeah. On a Virgin American. It's going to be great.
Hey, you're a celebrity. That's what I'm saying, though. You're a celebrity this week. You don't want to give out too many of these details. You know, everybody's going to be trying to, you know, hit you up as if you're going to have the answer to who's going to win on Saturday.
But that's true. I don't want to have somebody, like, talk my ear off on the plane, you know?
Exactly.
But, yeah, so we're going to go. We're going to head out tomorrow. As you know, our final poll came out today, which predicts Johnny Manziel is going to win. I think we've known for a couple of weeks now that that's the direction the race is going to go. We're going to get to New York, and what we usually do is, we'll probably do is on Wednesday, we'll probably talk about Colin Klein and a little bit of the history surrounding Kansas State, which isn't much, but we'll try to delve into it as much as possible. And Colin Klein. Thursday, we'll talk about Notre Dame and Manti Te'o. Notre Dame, of course, is the preeminent Heisman power in Heisman history. And then on Friday, we'll talk about Texas A&M and Johnny Manziel. we'll also, along the way, hopefully we're trying to get an interview with John David Crow, who was the very first Texas A&M Heisman winner. We're also trying to get a hold of Hugh Green, who was the last man to finish second in Heisman as a defensive player, and hopefully, you know, we can get some pretty good Johnny on the spot type interviews on Friday when we'll be doing the Heisman press conferences before the ceremony. And then on the ceremony itself, we'll be doing pretty instant analysis and breakdown. One of the things you don't get when you watch the ceremony at home is sort of a breakdown of how the regions voted down to the particulars, you know, when they voted, or what part of the, you know, what part of each region voted for which player, down to like, you know, down to more details. So we try to go through that and break it down and look at all the historical factoids that can be, you know, brought forward and try to, you know, put some context to the results, put in some photo galleries and, you know, pretty much get people a sense of what it's like to be around the Heisman ceremony in early December in New York.
And it's very cool because I've always wondered what the other side of the curtain is for that. I just recently attended the NFL draft for the first time, and it was the same way where, you know, there's just a lot of information that's given at the event that you don't get on television. And thanks to, you know, obviously following on the blog and following you on Twitter, there's that opportunity if you are there to be able to share that out with all of your followers to give just another idea of what the event and then the ceremony is like.
Yeah, it's really interesting because this will be my, I've been to every ceremony since 2006. And each one of them has its own different flavor. Some of them were, the press conferences were at different locations. They've all been at, since I've been there, at either the Nokia Theater, now called the Best Buy Theater, in Times Square. Of course, back in the old days, it was at the Downtown Athletic Club. But that was harmed during 9/11, so they never really went back there. One of our underrated traditions that we do at Heisman Pundit is we do sneak into the Heisman set, usually on Wednesday or Thursday while they're still building it, and we usually do a clandestine report from the set because it is an ESPN production. So they actually do not allow media outside of ESPN, usually outside of Ivan Maisel or somebody from the .com world onto this set. So everyone else is confined to their media sector. But we try to, we don't really, it was the first time we sneaked in was purely by accident because I just walked in on my first Heisman ceremony, ended up hanging out during the Heisman cocktail hour beforehand and talking to guys like Gary Beavin and a few others, and Charles White, who growled at me to stop bothering him while he was trying to eat appetizers. So it was pretty fun.
Now you're Jeopardy. I'm telling you, you can't give away too many of these details because now somebody's going to try and catch you from sneaking into the cocktail.
Let them try to stop me.
I want to go back to talking about the different regions and the way that the voting is broken down, because that's been one thing that I know I've really been interested as I've learned. There's been so much more to learn about the Heisman Trophy race, just sort of obviously because of your help and just getting a better idea of it. Do you have an idea? I know basically you get your straw poll. There's lots of different ways you can read it. In your opinion, you know, how do you think the different regions broke down for these candidates as far as sort of where they got their power, who might have won any regions? Is there any way that you can tell by now, or do you have a hunch?
I've got a pretty good hunch that Manziel's going to win. I think he's going to win 5 of 6 regions, maybe 4 of 6 regions. I think obviously Tao is going to win the Midwest. And I think the only other region where Tao might win is the Northeast. The Northeast is populated by a lot of national media types, people who work in New York, people who work at Bristol for ESPN. These are people who aren't, you know, they live in the Northeast, but they're not Northeast people. They're people from all around, and they tend to be more tied into kind of the big media style, of things. And I feel like usually that region tends to go for kind of the trendy candidate. And, you know, it depends on whether you think Manziel is the trendy candidate or whether it's Tao this year. But I would guess that Manziel is probably going to win the Northeast, but if Tao does win another region, it will be the Northeast, not only because of that factor, but because the Northeast is also, it has a little bit of that connection, that kind of that longtime Notre Dame connection with, you know, they play in Yankee Stadium and there's in the kind of the Northeast Catholic connection as well. So I have a feeling that the Northeast has a little bit of an affinity for Notre Dame, and that if Tao does win any regions outside of the Midwest, it will be in the Northeast. Other than that, I think Manziel gets the Southwest. He gets the South. When I look at the Far West, I think Manziel gets the Far West because, and part of it's my anecdotal experience, looking at some of these Heisman voters I know who live in the West here, and some of them, most of them are picking Manziel. They're not picking Manti Te'o. They're picking Johnny Manziel. And if people who I know are on the West Coast and they're picking Johnny Manziel, I imagine there's quite a few more.
Hey, how did Fisher get a vote? How'd that happen?
That's a good question. That might be a story better told off the air. But let's just say I had something to do with that one.
Oh, okay. It was I kid. Of course, Brian Fisher, Pac-12 Network. We worked on the Eye on College Football for the last couple of years. He's a good friend of both Chris and I. So I say that in all good fun.
Let's put it this way: I wanted to work at CBS. And I was trying to motivate some people to help get it done.
I got you. hey, game respect game. Can't hate on that. All right.
Exactly.
This was sort of where I was going with this. Now, if you got to each Heisman voter got to rank 3 players, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and as we look at each of the different regions, I was just wondering if you could help me sort of piece together, who do you think some of these next best players are? Because with 3 finalists, it's compared to some of the recent years, it's a small group of finalists. And I know you've talked about how there's a cut, you know, basically they draw a line and where there's a big dip. And I was wondering if it was possible to figure out who were 4 and 5 and some of these next guys in line that almost were Heisman finalists based on the balloting?
Well, if I had to guess, make an educated guess, that I would say that 4 or 5 are, 4 was probably either Marquise Lee or Braxton Miller. They both have very similar situations, although it doesn't seem like it on the surface, given that one is 12-0 and one is 7-5. But they're both sophomores from traditional Heisman powers who were sort of put on the back burner a bit. USC because of their disappointing season, Ohio State because they really couldn't get involved with the BCS standings. They were both guys who weren't really set up going into the year as Heisman candidates, but were seen as potential players who, if they developed, could become that. They both did that, but they both sort of had a little bit lacking. With Lee, something lacking. With Lee, it was the overall team success, and with Miller, it was probably maybe his overall numbers. Even though they might look good in a vacuum, they didn't necessarily look as good when you consider all the dual-threat quarterbacks that were thriving this year, Jordan Lynch, Johnny Manziel, Colin Klein. His numbers weren't as impressive as those guys. So both Lee and Miller had some drawbacks. So neither of them could really build up enough support to merit getting invited to New York. So there's probably a huge drop-off between what Colin Klein got in his support to that next player. And I would say if I had money to bet, I would say that Miller was 4 and Lee was 5, or Lee was 4 and Miller was 5, some variation on those two. If I was really pressed, I would say Miller would probably finish 4th and Lee 5th. But it was probably very close between the two.
Yeah, and obviously you would think that Lee, would be getting the West Coast, but he'd be more likely to get West Coast 2 or 3s, while Miller might be able to get Midwest 2 or 3s, obviously just based on the regions, right?
Yeah, for sure. There's probably fewer guys in the Midwest who will, who will be ranked ahead of Miller on people's ballots beyond, Tao. Whereas in the West, you might have a couple of the Oregon guys. Tao himself is in Hawaii, so he's on the West Coast. And then you also have, just some random guys like Kadeem Carey or Jonathan Franklin who might show up on some people's ballots instead of Marquise Lee. And that's when you go into like the partisans, there's the USC media contingent, and there's the UCLA media contingent, and there's the Oregon media contingent and the Bay Area media contingents. And if they can't vote for one of their own, then they vote for, some other person who they're familiar with. And if they're not really familiar or not that impressed with people who are close to them, then they'll probably just go for the overall, the overall leader.
So, all right, we probably got some Kenyon Barner. I was just trying to think, who are some of the other names that are going to fall next in line after showing up on ballots?
I'd say Kenyon Barner would be one. AJ McCarron. I think they'll be in the 6-7 range, those two guys. I think you could see, from that point on, I think you could see like a Jarvis Jones, like around 8, potentially. Maybe a Jadeveon Clowney, around 8 or 9. I think you could see, Geno Smith, just because of the Mid-Atlantic factor, could still squeeze in the top 10. You might see Monty Ball squeezing in the top 10, some of those, Wisconsin media types. I'd say of that bunch, that group, Kenyon Barner, Marcus Mariota might squeeze in there at the very bottom of the list, maybe 10th or 9th. I'd say that those guys I've just named are probably the best bets to kind of close out the top 10.
I would say that there was no real surprises on any of those names you figured out. But you mentioned Geno Smith there and still getting some Mid-Atlantic, some votes. When we look back on this, and obviously you've been sort of studying the Heisman Trophy race for a very long time, are we really only going to remember, assuming that Johnny Manziel does win as the straw poll and you have projected and as many people do believe, are we really just going to remember, this last just exhilarating run of Johnny Football, or do you think that we're still going to remember how, you know, Geno Smith was right there for such a long time, then Colin Klein was right there for such a long time? Because in the moment right now, it's been almost an exhausting race with sort of how each of these candidates have built themselves up, and then they sort of at some point slip and fall and crumble, and it's been, you know, Manziel that just sort of slowly rose to the top like foam or something like that.
Yeah, it's been a war of attrition this entire race. And what you'll see next year, and I'll guarantee it, is you'll see whoever the great candidate is in September next year, people will say, well, Geno Smith was the guy last year, so this guy's not going to win this year. And if he doesn't do well, he won't win. But if he does do well, he might. You know, people are always fighting the last war, so to speak, when they look at these campaigns. And every race is different. There's always a few loops that get thrown that tend to challenge, at least my understanding of the race. And it's always interesting to see. You never really fully know what happened in the race until it's over, and then you can look at the numbers and say, okay, Johnny Manziel won this Heisman, and look, he had great numbers: 4,600 yards of total offense, 43 touchdowns, but it really didn't matter. Those numbers didn't really matter, or they didn't really hold value until he beat Alabama. And once he beat Alabama, people could then work their way back and say, he put up those great numbers against those other teams. Maybe they weren't as good as Alabama, but he also did well against Alabama. So we know that those numbers weren't a fluke. So it put a lot of context to what he was performing. And then they saw him play, and they saw this, you know, whirling dervish of a player, gaining yards while he's running in circles. And it was an exciting thing to watch, and the fact that he was doing as a freshman was all the more intriguing. And then you add in the nickname and the fact that he hadn't talked to anybody all year, and it was very much a curiosity and very much a unique moment in Heisman history, and that's what we're going to see on Saturday, come to a culmination.
Yeah, no, you just that was very well put, Mr. Houston. It's like you talk about this for a living. I was thinking about that, you know, if Texas A&M goes 5-7, Manziel is Jordan Lynch as far as status,
exactly.
As far as like where they fall, because you're basically just relying on the stats at that point, right?
Exactly. And it goes back to what I've always talked about with if you play for certain schools, you have advantages. If you play for power schools, you have advantages. And if you play in certain leagues and you have the chance to play against elite teams and you can do great things against elite teams, you have a chance to make a name for yourself. I mean, let's face it, if Manti Te'o was playing at Kansas State, he'd be Arthur Brown, or something. He wouldn't be getting the same opportunities to be seen as a Heisman candidate if you didn't play for Notre Dame. This isn't to take anything away from Manti Te'o. This is just the facts of life in the Heisman race. And that is, tomorrow, if a great quarterback emerges for Notre Dame, he's a Heisman candidate. That's just the way it is. It's like looking at the overall economy. You're always going to have Coke and Pepsi and GM and Ford, and those big brand names are always going to have an advantage over the up-and-coming insurgent name. What was that movie?
Surge Soda?
Tucker.
What?
Tucker. The auto trying to go up against the big cars. That's how hard it is.
Yeah.
It's hard to win a Heisman when you play for Kansas State or Northern Illinois, because you got to be perfect. And you're held to a higher standard, and it's unfortunate. And I often get people asking me, complaining to me, actually saying I should, lead the charge one way or that. But I'm trying to just describe the race how it is, not how it should be, because I don't really feel it's, up to me to determine this.
That's why we like you, Chris. You're not pushing any agenda. Well, it's all right. Do you think, please debunk this for me, because I heard somebody make a point and I'm not buying it. But they said, you look at the Heisman finalists, there's no Marquise Lee, or they said no USC, no Ohio State, and then almost made a comment as if, we can see where the Heisman Trust, like, that they do still value, like, almost as if it was because of NCAA sanctions, they were hinting that the Heisman Trust voting community held that against those candidates. I don't know if I believe that at all, except for obviously Braxton Miller just not being able to be in the conversation. I don't think that he and Lee were necessarily both packaged under that same umbrella. Am I wrong?
No, I think that's bunk. I think you're right. I don't think that was has anything to do with why those guys didn't make it to New York. They have very there's very clear and obvious reasons why they didn't make it to New York. One, they didn't get enough votes. But they didn't get enough votes because Marquise Lee played on a team that was 7-5. That was hugely disappointing. He didn't get to play in the Pac-12 championship game, which was a huge factor. Because it not only hurt him, not being able to play on that final weekend, but it prevented him from producing numbers to support his, the cause. The same thing with Braxton Miller. It wasn't that being on probation itself hurt his Heisman chances. It was the fact that being on probation did not allow Ohio State to play a meaningful game this year, nor did it allow them to play in the Big Ten title game, which would have given him another chance to show off his wares and increase his production. So those two factors were huge. Also the fact that they were true sophomores, and I know Johnny Manziel was doing this as a freshman, but you can only have so many guys who do not have great name recognition competing in the same race. You can't have them all come out on top. So somebody's going to be left somebody's going to have short shrift in the race. So those guys didn't make it. They didn't capture enough the imagination of enough of the voters, and that's why they're not going.
What are you most? What are three things? I'm putting you on the spot here. Sorry about that. What are three things that you are curious about, or that are you are looking forward to about the week ahead, all the way through Saturday night?
Well, I want to see what how Johnny Manziel does with the media. If his press conference earlier in the week or earlier last week was any indication, he's going to do just fine. But you never know. I'm curious to see if anybody's going to ask him any uncomfortable questions because, of course, he did have the arrest over the summer. So I'm curious to see if that happens. I'm curious to see what kind of fervor we're going to see from the different fan bases. As far as the Notre Dame people and the Texas A&M people, it's always fun to see the back and forth. So I'm curious to see that. Other than that, I'm just looking forward to seeing some of the old Heisman winners back there. Hopefully I get a chance to talk to some of them.
Yeah. Well, I hope you get a chance too, because then hopefully we'll be listening to those conversations as well. So safe travels tomorrow, my friend. Hope everything goes well as you and Heisman Pundit Jr. take off towards the Big Apple. And be sure to follow, of course, listeners. You can follow him at Heisman Pundit and follow HeismanPundit.com, the Heisman section on CBSSports.com. We will be bringing you all of that content that he mentioned at the beginning of the show all through this week. This is Heisman week, man. This is Chris Houston's time to shine, and we appreciate all of his hard work through the year, and especially as he gets to shine a little and we get to tag along CBSSports.com throughout this whole thing. So, Chris, good luck, man.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. If you want to talk when I'm in New York, I'll be around.
For sure. We will be getting in touch with him. And remember, you can get all of the CBSSports.com college football podcasts by subscribing on iTunes. And, of course, make sure that you bookmark the Eye on College Football blog, where we also will give you all the liner notes and the track listings, if you will, and all the content so that you can skip around and find out all about your favorite team. For Chris Houston, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.